Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Hello, Dr. Ray.
Hi, Dr. Ray. How are you?
I'm sure I'm going to get really good advice from you.
Well, I don't know about that.
You're right on track with this. You're right on track.
My idea, my theory, my guidance is a bit of a stretch.
Everybody make a mistake.
Does that comfort you?
No.
Am I close?
No.
You are so wrong.
You're so wonderful.
Why do I have to be the insightful professional?
Someone intelligent on the radio. Yay!
Did I make you feel a lot better or what?
No, you made me feel worse.
Now, from the studios of Living Bread Radio Network in Canton, Ohio, the hometown of Mother Angelica, here's Dr. Ray.
How is it that I can feel and be so wrong, yet so wonderful? Just goes to show you. People look at you from their own perspective. You could be the greatest person in the world, one's perspective, and then another's perspective, you shouldn't be in this world. Good to have you with me. I'm Dr. Ray Guarendi. Thank you for joining me. This is our Friday version of The Doctor Is In. This is Look Back Friday. What do we look back on? Oh, I don't know. I look back on what room I painted in the house, and does it need another coat? I look back upon the shirt that I wore yesterday, and can I wear it again today? All right, that's not really relevant for you. Look Back Friday is previous calls, which we actually don't look back on. We listen back on them. And for various reasons, we select them. We, meaning Andrew Krucek and myself, my producer and editor there, because I want to say more about them. I want to say more about every single call, obviously, but you can't do therapy. But some of the calls lend themselves to going in a different direction. Some of them lend themselves to further explanation, but you don't have time because you can't talk to somebody for 22 minutes when you have other people waiting. Rude. So we've got calls we select and say, okay, where am I going to go with this one? So why? And that's coming up. I called my son's an engineer. Okay. He showed me his master's thesis. He said, Dad, you had a 1 year of engineering, didn't you? I said, yeah. I said, I don't know if my motive was that good. I just wanted to live in a caboose. I just thought that was so cool. And I realized I had the wrong idea of engineering. And he said, well, look up my master's thesis and see what you think. I said, Andrew, there are several words here I understand. The, an, contrary, conclusion. That's pretty much it. Well, I called him up the other day. It's my son. I called him up and I said, Andrew, what are you doing? What are you doing right now? What are you working on? He said, Dad, I'm working on aquathermal treatment of ceramics, aluminum, and steel under a constrained environment. I thought, whoa, boy, I'll tell you what, that kid's into stuff. I was impressed. Until I asked him further, got a few more details, and I learned that he was washing dishes with hot water under his wife's supervision. Yeah, you can do all kinds of things with language. You sure can. And speaking of language, my monologue today is going to go after language. The very, very high profile term is man-made climate change. You can't use global warming anymore because there's some evidence that things are cooling in certain places. So, well, we got to go climate change, man-made. Now, that seems to be the debate among equally expertise people that, in fact, there is climate change, but how is it coming about? You know, what's the sun involvement in all this? Sun meaning S-U-N, sun. Well, I got to thinking. There is a phenomenon that I call man-made religious change. I'd always wondered if people turned from God, they would turn to no God. They'd be atheists, or they'd be so strongly agnostic that they were practical atheists. I mean, you get to the point where you say, I don't know if God exists. I don't know what he is, who he is, what he does, and it doesn't affect my life. Then you're a practical atheist. You live as though there is no God. You may give him a little intellectual attention here and there, but short of that, not much. But then I realized that's not really the way it's going. I think it's going toward man-made religious change. What I can do is redefine God. And I think this ties also into self-image. My self-image says I'm wonderful and I'm special, and that's the way I'm supposed to look at myself to have a really healthy psychological existence. So it seems to me to be a short step from a hyper-inflated self-image to viewing this God as made by me. But he thinks like I do. I don't have to not believe in him. All I have to do is remake him in my image. That's all I got to do. He thinks a certain way. For example, just recently, a young man on Facebook who was acting very immorally in his life. And he said, well, my God loves me. Okay, well, he created God. He didn't listen to what God may have said through his church or through the Bible. God spoke as he put words in God's mouth. He's a loving God, therefore he loves me, no matter what I'm doing here. So I think you could call it man-made God change, man-made religion change, man-made moral change. It speaks to a very broad phenomenon. We essentially make God not God. I'm God. That's it. Why? Well, because God thinks like I do. And if God thinks like I do, then pretty much he dovetails the way he does things with the way I do things. And I miscalculated. Because I didn't realize the power of man-made religious change. Belief in God and religion, which are basically the ways we express our belief in God, is not something I really want because I have to obey. I have to understand what God wants, which may be very different than what I want. So it's so much better for me to say I'm religious because God thinks like I do. Therefore, I'm 100% religious because me and God think alike. So I can still be a religious person on my terms. What a gig. Talk about an appeal. So much better appeal than denying God's existence. Don't you think? I still get the benefits of thinking that me and God are buddies. We're on good terms. And then I still get to do what I want. Because he thinks just like me. Very, very slippery slope. But leave it up to human beings to figure out how to do that. Brilliant. In a delusional sort of way. I'm Dr. Ray. When we get back, I'm going to take our first call from Beth from Ohio. Concerned about the diagnosis given to her daughter.
This program brought to you in part by the nonprofit Angelicum Academy.
This is Father Joseph Essio. I have an important message for all you homeschooling families. You can get an outstanding and fully accredited Catholic college education and save $100,000. To learn how, go to angelicum.net. That's angelicum.net. Earn 75 college credits and an associate's degree in high school for just $3,500 a year. And earn your BA degree just 1 year later at age 19. Check this out at angelicum.net.
humility, abandonment to divine providence, docility are not part of the constellation of 21st century heroic men and women. And I think this is really, in this day and age, this is an especially difficult quality to practice, because we are increasingly told that our life is in our hands, that what we will, we can bring about. We look at the heroes of our age, and they are men and women who kind of take things into their own hands. In other words, you're not being, by being abandoning yourself to divine providence, you're not being irresponsible and uncaring about what happens.
Cresta in the Afternoon with Al Cresta, 4 Eastern on EWTN Radio.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria mutual funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria mutual funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria mutual funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
Están escuchando al Dr. Ray, mi héroe y amigo español de corazón.
Good to have you with me,
Dr. Ray Guarendi. What else we got here? All right. This is Look Back Friday. Go to it, straight to it. One of the more... Okay, this one is not... See, that's dumb to say okay. That's just a filler word I don't need to say. It's inarticulate and stuff. This is one of the more misunderstood words, diagnoses, psychological implications. Narcissism is probably number one, but I think this one is in the top three. Now, who diagnosed your daughter with borderline personality disorder?
Well, her counselor did. She had been in and out of seeing a counselor for, ever since she was like 11. And when she was in high school, her senior year, well, actually it was the end of her junior year, they had a counselor that was coming to school, and she got involved with her because they could, the teachers and stuff could see her struggling. When I talked to that counselor, that's where, we got the diagnosis. So I actually went back to a previous counselor that she had, because I was still kind of in contact with her, in dealing with her. And she said, I saw that too. We just hesitate to diagnose that until they're a little older, because it could just be, that time of life and sure, everything else that they're dealing with.
Sure.
So your question is, I assume your daughter's still living with you. Your question is, how do I hold her accountable?
Well, I mean, you know how it is with borderlines. Nothing is ever their fault. Everything is so extreme. And, she's making some very bad decisions. And I'm trying to hold her accountable to that. But she's constantly, you hate me and it's not my fault. And, trying to get her to get a job or even finish school. She dropped out of school.
Beth,
I'm
going
to you off, and I listen I'm, to others. Sorry.
I'm going to offer you something. The idea that the borderline personality disorder is hovering over you and your daughter is affecting your judgment. I suspect that you're looking at your daughter thinking, but what if she is disturbed? She's not a normal human being. How can I make these demands on her? How can I have these consequences? She's not right. Okay, that may be what's affecting you. I would suggest, first of all, borderline personality is a very broad disorder.
very broad. It's a judgment disorder. And if you want to summarize it down to what it really means, it's a person who's just really not living their life well at all. Okay? Mm-hmm. I would deal with your daughter as your daughter. When she's not wanting to go to work, what are you going to do about it? You can't say, well, I know what I would normally do about it. But since she's borderline, I'm not sure what I'm allowed to do about it. No, you deal with what you have to deal with. When she's uncooperative at home and she's disrespectful, and you know what you do about it, you would kick her out. That'd be your choice.
Right.
Well, you're stuck because somebody said, no, your daughter's afflicted. With what? Well, she's afflicted with borderline. Well, how do you know she's got borderline? Well, because she has all these characteristics. Well, why does she have all these characteristics? Well, because she's borderline. Well, how do you know she's borderline? Because she has all those characteristics. You see what I'm saying?
Right.
Yeah. I mean, you know, this is one of the problems with personality diagnoses. We take characteristics of a person, somebody's clinical judgment, they're too severe and they've been around too long, and we put a label on them. And then the label makes it sound like they got a disorder. Something's wrong with them. Well, yeah, something is wrong with them because they're living their life badly. But to look at your daughter and say, I don't know what to do with her because she's been diagnosed this. My thought would be she's just been difficult for a long time, ever since she was young.
It's been a struggle.
Yeah. And so this may be who she is. She's rattled by her emotions. Her judgment is bad. She's oppositional. She's slow to take responsibility. Okay. And what are you going to do about it? Because she's not 11 anymore. She's 18.
Right.
So that's, I would say, Beth, you think about dealing with your daughter as your daughter, as opposed to some person afflicted with a disorder that doesn't allow you to make motherly decisions.
So when she's using that as a crutch, because she'll do that, she'll say, well, you know,
I can't,
like, getting a job.
She can use
it
all she
wants. You know, I can't do that, Mom, because you know that I can't handle that.
That's right. Okay. Now, that may or may not be true. I don't know. I don't know your daughter. But obviously, there are things she can handle.
Right.
I think, Beth, you're going to get to a point where you will have had enough. May not happen now because she's 18, but when she's 24 and if she's still doing this, you're going to say, you know what? I can't take this anymore. That's usually the way it goes. Briefly, Beth has described a difficult young adult, difficult teenager. In a lot of ways, difficult. And she described on the basis of interpersonal problems, lack of motivation regarding responsible conduct, just simply a poorly useful decision process toward life. Let me read you the official symptoms of borderline personality, and you will see that it's pretty significant here. And if Beth were listening now, I would wonder if she'd say, oh, no, none of those are my daughter. A couple of them are, but certainly not the other ones. Let me listen to this. Okay. Unstable relationships. Now, the girl's 18. The most prominent relationship she probably has is with her parents. Or as she had a string of boyfriends, a string of friends, all of which have been disrupted. Probably not. Unstable emotions. Okay, yeah. Yeah, how unstable? What's that mean? Does that mean a trip switch temper? Or just, in fact, I spend 3 weeks really down and 2 weeks okay, and how what's that mean? Recurrent suicidal behavior. Self-harm. Chronic feeling of emptiness. Feeling detached from reality. See, that's pretty serious stuff. So to diagnose someone borderline, and also, let me give you a few of these other ones here. There's drug use related to histrionic, narcissistic, antisocial personality disorder. Prognosis improves over time. Now, given that though, those kind of summarize the clinical symptoms of bipolar or borderline disorder. Oh, and by the way, it is usually diagnosed in adults. That's why the one counselor was a little nervous about that. Here's something I've noticed, and I'm not questioning the diagnosis. I can't do that. I don't know the specifics. But here is something I've noticed. That those who are involved in counseling on a brief or, I don't want to say shallow because that's a bad word, a brief or a limited basis are more likely to reach for these harder type diagnoses, the more scary type diagnoses. I've seen this with medical doctors. God bless them. They perform a wonderful function. However, oftentimes when a parent will come in and describe a certain amount of conduct in a kid, they will put forth a diagnosis on the basis of really not a whole lot of information because they don't have the time. Okay, they can't interview the kid for 2 hours. They can't interview the parent for an hour. They can't do any on-site observations. They can't. That's not what their practice is. So my experience has been that borderline personality is a significant level of maladjustment. It is. The word borderline, you know what it comes from? It kind of comes from the never-never land between the old term neurosis and psychosis. In other words, this is a person who is a little more severely maladjusted than your basic neurotic concerns like anxiety and some interpersonal problems and maybe some phobias and loss of contact with reality, psychosis. They don't have a necessarily flagrant, obvious loss of contact with reality, hallucinations, delusions. They almost flirt with it. There are oddities in their perceptions, their thinking. Perhaps even, I had a daughter like this who we couldn't quite tell if in fact she was hearing voices or she was confused about what her mind was saying. We never could sort that out, and she didn't know. So borderline personality is a clinical diagnosis, and it really needs to be made by a clinician who has a lot of experience in this. I have a very close friend who's told me their son, their adult son, has been diagnosed borderline personality disorder, and their response was, oh, what a relief. Now we know why he is the way he is. And I kind of said, no, you don't. I said, you know the description of the way he is in somebody's judgment. That's what you know. You don't know why he is the way he is. That's very complex. Interaction between his personality, what he experiences in life, how he thinks, his upbringing, all those things, they all interplay. So you have to deal with the supposed symptoms of borderline personality. There isn't one type of therapy that you say, okay, if somebody's diagnosed with borderline personality, this is what you do. This is the therapy. Check it. Here's the formula. It's not like that because it can manifest itself in different ways and different intensities given a patient's symptom picture. Yeah, I don't know. I think when you get into the personality disorders, there's a lot of fuzziness, a lot. And to be a disorder, it's got to be pretty significant. It can't just be this is a person who kind of struggles in three areas. All righty, Dr. Ray, when we come back, more of previous calls and more of current comment.
Why do we need Catholic radio? Because not everybody's sitting in front of a computer or watching their television set at home. How about when driving to work? Catholic radio's there for you. I may be a Catholic priest, but I'm still a student of the faith. And Catholic radio helps supply good material, whether it be a question and answer format show, whether it be a show itself on doctrine or theology. I myself, as a priest, am always learning.
Father Wade thinks Catholic radio is important. So should you.
How do we make satisfaction, do penance for our sins? Absolution from a priest takes away sin, the Catholic Catechism tells us, but it does not remedy all the disorders caused by sin. For instance, if we wrong our neighbors, we must repair the harm as far as possible, i.e., we must return stolen goods, restore the reputation of anyone we have slandered, compensate the person we have injured. Not only does sin hurt the person we have wounded, it injures the sinner. In order to regain our spiritual health, we must do something to make amends. And that is where expiation for sin comes in. Thus, the confessor administers a penance for the person's spiritual good that is commensurate with the gravity of their sins. Confession brings not only reconciliation with God, but also with the Church. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
Step away from the turmoil of the day. In A Holy Hour with Mother Angelica, you'll find lessons that touch every aspect of our relationship with God and our neighbor. These meditations and prayers will help you turn to Jesus in your everyday life. A Holy Hour with Mother Angelica from EWTN Publishing, now available at EWTNRC.com or call 1-800-854-6316.
When you write a book, you're allowed about a day and a half of relaxing after the final manuscript goes into book form, because then the editor immediately starts to bug you. What do you got for your next book? What do you got going on? What do you got planned? They do this a lot, you know. I just want to rest on my laurels. I do have a new book. I've really been working hard at the virtue of humility, and I think I've got it mastered. So my next book is going to be The Three Most Humble People I Know and How I Taught the Other Two. That's the working title. I don't see any reason to change it. Smith climbs to the top of Mount Sinai to get a close enough look to talk to God. He asked the Lord, "Lord, what does a million years mean to you?" The Lord replies, "A minute." Then Smith asks, "And what does $1 million mean to you?" The Lord says, "A penny." Smith asks, "Can I have a penny?" The Lord says, "In a minute." Don't try to out talk the Lord, huh? Okay. Got to go to another call. Let's go to Amanda. Amanda from Ohio. She had a change of mind, a change of heart, and which is good, because she came to realize this was not going in the direction that she thought it would, and as the culture pushed her, it would.
I've been very lenient with her, and then it took me reading an article about all these filters that these apps have and how they're affecting, you know, how these girls or even boys maybe are feeling about themselves and how they, you know, feel like they need this filter to look pretty, you know, or look a certain way. And I asked her one night after I saw that article, I said, you know, do you ever feel this way? And it opened up this whole thing that I had no clue she was feeling. So it's been, and then it's been hard for me to know how to go back and change the rules or set the limits when I've been super lenient up until
Well, you
now.
Can change the rules anytime you want, Amanda. That's part of good yeah. parenthood. You can say, you know, right. my judgment hasn't been good up to this point. I gotta change directions. Oh, yeah, you're allowed to do that. Now, your daughter won't think you're allowed to do that. Your daughter will look at you like, what is this? I mean, I told you I was getting a little messed up in the head because I didn't expect you to do anything about her. I never would have told you. Right?
Right.
Yeah.
Well, and I feel a little bit guilty. I think I parent a little bit out of, not a little bit, too much out of guilt because of the relationship she has with her her real dad. I think through that I end up, you know, feeling guilty and
compensatory parenting.
Yeah.
I got to make it up. This kid's got ripped off right. in one area of life, so I gotta balance the scale by giving too much in another area of life, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. And you saw, my dear, how that doesn't work.
All it does
is make her more discontent. You're going to be a look-back call, and one of the reasons you are is because you came to the realization that your daughter was being adversely affected by social media, mostly in her self-image. But here's the bad news, and we don't have time to get into it right now. Social media does a lot more damage than that. You just happen to be made aware through this article. And by the way, I am offended because I have written a book on this that would have opened your eyes wide open. I'll tell you what the book is.
Yes.
All right. It's called Raising Upright Kids in an Upside-Down World. And I talk about how your children can be shaped right under your nose by technology, media, and social media. It's on my website. Mm-hmm. I guarantee you it will open your eyes. And also, the book will give you the strength of spine to do what you need to do. See, that's where the big problem comes in. Many parents know. They're like you. They go, I don't like this. But then they don't have the strength to change it because they're afraid. Kid will resent them. Kid won't like them, etc. I take care of all that for you. All of it.
Okay.
I'm glad you called.
Well,
thank you, dear.
I very much appreciate that information. Thank you.
This reveals a parental struggle, especially when a parent decides, I have to change course. It's to be expected that we parents will go in directions in raising our children that at some point we'll conclude this is not a good direction. It either needs tweaked or complete reversal with cessation of the direction. This happens most significantly with social media and smartphones. Many parents, good parents, people that want to raise responsible moral children, will go with a cultural flow and provide a smartphone very early in the child's life, 10, 11, 12. In this case, we had a situation where Amanda, well, her daughter's 13, but apparently the phone had been around a while, didn't like what was happening. In this case, she saw her daughter attempting to live up to some sort of a social image and to do whatever she could do to look good online. And she's decided, I got to do something about this. Now, my experience has been that many parents don't do what they would like to do about this. And the reason they don't is because they're scared of the child's reaction. What kind of resentment are they going to meet? How much duplicity? How much deception? What will it do to the relationship? So they walk gingerly in changing their mind. They try to convince the child, and the child obviously is not going to agree. So they have to take action. Or they consider taking action. If they take it and then it blows up, many of them relent and go back. But as Amanda admitted, in attempting to show herself open to her daughter's desires, in this case, a smartphone, it led to more trouble than she had anticipated. It didn't make her daughter be satisfied that mom had acquiesced in permission. It made her more upset and affected her personhood. I advise parents, when you've decided you've gone in the wrong direction, you have every right, I think the duty, to change course. And you're going to have to weather a storm in many cases. But the interesting thing is that the storm and its results can be temporary. Continuing in the same bad direction can risk being permanent.
Bishop Robert Barron on the priesthood.
Not everyone who's attracted to the Lord and to a life of service is necessarily meant to be a priest. So there's all kinds of forms. I mean, from, let's say, the brotherhood, if you want to stay within a formal religious context, but then all kinds of ministries within a parish, all kinds of lay ministries that you can do. So not everyone's called to the priesthood. A priest is someone who is dedicated, devoted to ongoing study and ongoing prayer. To be a spiritual father. As Pope Benedict said, one of his wisest remarks, he said, people want many things from a priest, but what they want above all is someone who's a master of the spiritual life. Hey, I'm great at this ministry, and hey, I'm great at organizing this meeting, and hey, I'm great. Fine, but ultimately what the people want is you're a master of the spiritual life. You got to be, therefore, trained in prayer and theology and spirituality and so on.
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
Christ is the answer with Father John Ricardo.
In the midst of our culture today, in this age of relativism, which wants to grant Jesus some significance, but not so much, so we'll give him wise man, great leader, inspiring preacher, great teacher, prophet. You don't get that option when you claim to be God. What reasons do we have to believe that he is who he said he is? And it's important, again, to employ the use of our reason and to understand that faith is not blind. My faith, and please God, the faith of everyone here, is not blind. It rests on something. It rests on a number of things, not least of which is my own experience of God, but it also has something substantial which can be claimed through history. We're not talking about a galaxy long, long ago, far, far away when we talk about Jesus. We're talking about a precise moment in history which has been testified to by countless testimonies, and you and I have access to them.
I want to be multimedia. I don't want to just write another book about humility. I have a new video game. I've got a new video game coming out. Restaurant Rampage. Yeah, you got the guide and action figure of me toward children acting up in restaurants. You have to guide me through the different servers, to the children, wherever they are, to the parent, and it's all timed. So the quicker you get me there, the quicker you can solve the situation, the more points you earn. Restaurant Rampage. I think it is. I think it has a future. This is Look Back Friday. Let's see what else we got here on, to use a little legal lingo, the docket. Let me look at the clock. Barbara from Wyoming has some understandable questions about what a concussion can do to someone's, if you will, personality. So what brings this to your mind? Who do you know that's had these concussions in the front part of the brain here?
Myself, for one. When I was about 7, I did fall on the front of my head and had to get stitches, and it left a scar, kind of, you know, a little indent in my head. Mm-hmm. And then probably about 30-some years ago, I was in a truck accident where my head hit the windshield. And there again, it was right to the frontal lobe, and I also again had stitches and swelling in the front of my head, and they said it was like mild concussion, I guess. And then about 2 years ago, I fell in my house. I tripped and I managed to hit the front of my head right between my eyebrows on like a wooden stand, and it, you know, cut it open and it swelled and such again. So I had read just a little bit about concussions and such things to the frontal lobe, and that it can cause personality changes and such. And so that's part of the reason I ask. I also have a sister who was in a bad accident in a car where I never heard anything about. I know she, you know, had some problems with, you know, because she hit her front of her head and her neck got kind of damaged, where she has a lot of chiropractic problems after that. But I actually read where someone kind of diagnosed her with, I guess you'd say, like a personality thing that they say happened to her after she was in that car accident. That her
Barbara, how old, if I may ask, how old are you?
I'm 63.
Okay, and you're thinking that because you've had a couple of situations where your brain has gotten rocked, you're wondering, has that affected me, correct? And how do you know, right?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, and I've noticed things about myself, even that I'm kind of think a lot of think, no, that just don't seem like me. I just don't seem to be myself anymore sometimes.
Well,
you know,
let's.
I'm going through a couple of times.
I want to give you a decent answer, my dear, because they're asking me, hey, take a break, Ray. One, it's hard to know that. Okay, unless you can actually look at your brain through an MRI or a PET scan, it's really hard to know where we can say, gee, Barbara, this stuff is finally catching up to you from those many, 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 many years ago. If indeed it would have caused damage, you would have probably noticed it then, as opposed to many, many, many years later. It could simply be that as you're getting older and your personality is adjusting to life in various ways, that indeed your memory is not quite as sharp. I mean, there's plenty of research that says our memory is not quite as sharp as we get older. Doesn't mean there's anything wrong with us. Just a natural process. So unless you really have evidence, my suggestion is you wouldn't worry about it. You wouldn't be too quick to interpret it and say, oh, no, this happened to me two or three times in the past 50 years. Is it manifesting itself now? I mean, it's unlikely. It's quite unlikely. So my suggestion is, I'm not a medical doctor, but if you want to go to a neurologist, go ahead. But chances are whatever you're experiencing may be explainable just in other things, you know, stress of life, whatever. We often want a singular explanation for complex behavior. Someone might come to me and say, when I was 9 years old, this is what my mother said to me. I'll never forget it. I cried for 2 days. I'm 33, and I've just ended my second failed relationship. I wonder if it was because of my trust issues back when I was 9. Unlikely. We like to pinpoint one cause for complex behavior way down the road, but that's generally not the simplistic answer. Someone who is having failed relationships twice at 33 could be picking people that are not good to have relationships with, could have a lot of immaturity, could have some personality quirks, could, in fact, if she recalls distinctly in a flashbulb memory type of moment, that episode at age 9, there could have been a whole lot of bad parenting. And that was just the one that really stuck out to her, a particular incident. But in fact, the parenting wasn't very good the whole time. And so as a result, she lost out on getting taught some things on how to better live life. Barbara's saying, when I was 7, I bonked my head pretty good. I got stitches. As I said, if there was significant results, probably would have shown up. And then she said, well, of course, then there were two other times, and maybe the sum total of that happening. To get a concussion, in vernacular, get your bell rung, you really got to jar the brain. Okay. When I was, how old? 12. I was downstairs, and I wanted to show my young cousin, who was 10, what I could do. I was standing on a chair, and I had previous, the day before, dove. I was about 8 feet away. I dove to grab an I-beam. If you're familiar, in the older houses, they used I-beams, steel I-beams as support across the basement to hold up the subflooring on the first floor. I had jumped, caught the I-beam, and swung all the way out parallel to the ground, and I felt myself almost lose a grip, but I didn't. I managed to hold on and came back. Wow. Wow, pretty cool, huh? So my cousin came over, we were down there, and I said, hey, Davey, watch this. I leaped, I caught that I-beam, and I swung, my momentum kept me all the way up. I swung all the way up and hit the 2x12 supports of the upper floor and lost grip. I went straight down. Fortunately, I hit the upper part of my back first. But then my head hit. It hit so hard. You know the phrase, ring your bell? Well, that's what it did. I heard a ringing that was so loud it drowned out everything. I immediately reached back and felt the back of my head, which by this time had already swollen way beyond its size. My mom was visiting with my godfather upstairs. I came upstairs. I couldn't talk. I was like, mom. They said my face was white as a sheet. Took me to the emergency room, diagnosed significant concussion. They sent me home, said, keep an eye on him. If he starts to vomit, we know we got a good concussion there. Well, of course I did. Down for a week. Missed school for a week. Recovered then. The swelling went down. All of this. Now I was, like I say, 12 probably. Now that's a concussion. That's a big one. I'm not sure what Barbara is talking about would in fact concuss her brain. Would rock it inside the cranial cavity. I don't know that. I can't know that. But what she seems to be describing is more she got hit in the front of her forehead and got a cut. So, and she's tying in some short-term memory problems. For example, right now, for the last 2 days, I have been trying to think. I've been trying to call up the name of the baseball player on the Baltimore Orioles who played third base, who broke Lou Gehrig's consecutive playing game record. I can't think of it. I cannot think of it at all. I can't retrieve it. I can't believe this. This is not good for a guy who plays trivia. I think that's just a function of age, retrieval problems. And I think that might have been what Barbara was saying. She's having some retrieval problems. Then she says, well, I'm not myself. I'm just not being myself. Well, you got to know what that means. What does that mean? Is she reacting emotionally to things she shouldn't have? And is that a result of what's going on in her life right now? Is she more socially isolated? Is it all having to do with COVID? What is going on to interpret some of this without saying, well, it was because of those 3 times I got bonked in the head pretty good. Who knows? I don't know. But it seems there would be other explanations. I'm Dr. Ray.
I'm done talking. Don't talk to me anymore. You hear me?
Dr. Ray, Dr. Ray, Dr. Ray, Dr. Ray, Dr. Ray. Oh, Dr. Ray.
Solidarity HealthShare began out of the Christian tradition of neighbor helping neighbor. They're a nonprofit medical cost-sharing ministry in which their members share in each other's eligible medical expenses. Solidarity Healthshare is not insurance, but rather an alternative way to pay for medical costs that adheres to the teachings of the Catholic Church. They'll never share in a medical care that goes against their values and morals, such as abortion, contraception, and sterilization. More information available at SolidarityHealthShare.org or at 844-313-4999.
The wisdom of Mother Angelica.
I never cease to wonder at, is that this Jesus, Son of God, came born in a stable, escapes from a king. When his whole life he's kind of hunted down by the jealousy and the ambition of the scribes and Pharisees and the king. And he speaks and heals to the people. He raises the dead and exorcises the demons. Nobody's grateful. He does all that. He continues to do all of that. And we still don't understand how much he loves us. Isn't that odd?
For more information on Mother Angelica, visit Religious Catalog at EWTNRC.com.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria mutual funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria mutual funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria mutual funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
Thank you for joining me. Do not have enough time in the rest of the Look Back program to take on another sentence? Call. Dave Barry, the humorist, has written some brilliantly funny commentaries, and along the way, he makes observations of the human condition. He says, one thing that is consistent across people is that we all think we're above average drivers. You notice that? People on the roads who do something dumb in front of you or aggressive in front of you, you automatically think you don't do anything like that. Now, I've been driving long enough to know I do things like that, not on purpose, but just because of, well, humanness, I guess, operating a vehicle with cars going every which direction. C.S. Lewis says this, we are all fallen creatures. And all very hard to live with. I don't like that observation. I don't want to think that I could be hard to live with. There are those who could think this. I don't know where they are. I'll stop associating with them. But if I'm going to think that other people are difficult, and we, you know, you all do that. I mean, if I said to you, tell me the top five people in your life that you think are difficult. You name them. You wouldn't be in that top five. That's a given. We never think we're as difficult as those other people. That's a psychological truth. 101-A, subsection 5, paragraph C. It's true. I think part of God's grace is enlightening, which is to help you see yourself. Are you difficult? Who would think that of you? Why would they think that of you? That is one of the hardest self-revelations to wrestle with. The irony of being difficult is that by its nature it hides. I don't think about if I'm difficult. Of course not. Why would I? I give myself a lot of leeway, a lot of flexibility. And, of course, the times that I am difficult, it's because somebody was difficult first. I wouldn't have been difficult if they wouldn't have been difficult first. So as C.S. Lewis says,
We are all fallen creatures. We acknowledge sin nature, don't we? But part of that sin nature is being difficult. It's the goal, I think, of a Christian to, over time, with God's help, be less difficult so that you and I would not be in the top five of anyone's categorizing of the five most difficult people in their lives. I'm Dr. Ray. Appreciate that. Thanks for joining me. Walk with God, always.
For information on Dr. Ray's presentations, books, and CDs, visit DRRay.com and follow him on Facebook. The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.